Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush. The last beta reader matchup of the year is happening now in November, with the matchup emails going out on the 2nd of December. Please note we won't have another one until after February of 2025. You know the drill by now. 3,000 words of your work will be critiqued by those writing in a similar genre and or time zone as you critique their own work in return. If you already have a writing group or beta readers who've looked at your work before, it's not considered cheating to get fresh eyes on your pages. Critique fatigue can set in when the same people read the same revisions too many times, meaning they anticipate all the action rather than truly being surprised or delighted by it. Give yourself the gift of good critique this holiday season and sign up before the 2nd of December. Go to my website, biancamurray.com, and look for the Beta Reader Matchup tab. Hi there, and welcome to our show, The Shit No One Tells You About Writing. I'm Bianca Murray, and I'm joined by Carly Waters and Cece Lira from PS Literary Agency. We'll be kicking off today's episode with our usual Books with Hooks segment, after which we'll go to today's guest. Hi everyone, welcome back to another Books with Hooks segment. As per usual, we're going to dive right in to maximize our time. Carly, will you please kick us off with the first query letter?
Dear Carly Waters, and then we have a content warning, trigger warning, mention of suicide. Set on a ranch in Joshua Tree National Park, Out of the Eater, 98,000 words, is a literary novel offering the rural coming-of-age struggle in Educated by Tara Westover and the intensity of a community enthralled by a charismatic man in The Girls by Emma Klein. It will appeal to fans of Burnham Wood by Eleanor Catton and I Love You But I've Chosen Darkness by Claire V. Watkins. 17-year-old Honey is breaking horses with her father when he tells her about his dream from God. The world is going to end in 7 days. To prepare, Honey's father recruits a militia from those attending his survivalist training weekend to join them in their bunker on the last day and emerge to face the chaos of end times. Honey has no reason to doubt her father. She's seen the black smoke from the ever-increasing wildfires, the empty shelves in the grocery store, and the man hanging in the park, his suicide note saying he's been warned about the planet going to shit. Yet she's full of doubt. Honey's mother, who disappeared 5 years ago, could always decipher the truth in her father's dreams. So Honey secretly searches for her mother. Honey is willing to steal a phone, trust a girl with a pretty smile, and wander the desert alone to bring her mother back. But after these sins, Honey discovers her mother has left for a reason. On the last day, Honey has to decide if she'll follow her family into the safety of the bunker or walk alone into an unstable world just as harsh and beautiful and on fire. I wrote this novel as a way to process what it was like to grow up on a seventh-generation ranch in California while plotting to escape my family's fundamentalist cult. I left, much like Tara Westover, only because of education, therapy, and mostly writing. I was drawn to you through the voice, tenacity of the authors you represent, especially Andrea Dunlop in The Women Are the Fiercest Creatures. I would be honored to be a part of your team. Thank you for your time and consideration, Author X.
Wonderful, Carly. Thank you. That felt quite short. What was the word count there and what was your take on that?
This one clocked in at 389, and thank you to the author for writing it into your query to make it easy for me. So I feel like it felt short in a good way. You know, I feel like we really hit on all the notes that we needed to hit on. It was compelling. It didn't kind of overtell. It really focused on plot. You know, I want to start at the top with the trigger warning. I don't know if we need this. I mean, I know it's super, you know, thoughtful and cautious and you do have somebody, you know, hanging in the park and that sort of thing, but it is mentioned and not like described per se. So I don't know. I mean, as I said, I appreciate and applaud your thoughtfulness. I think this could probably be served a bit better in the synopsis if in the actual book itself you have a bit more on the page in that regard. So just flagging that as a, you know, very thoughtful but potentially not necessary content warning for the sake of the query letter. So in terms of the first paragraph, so Educated is such an interesting comp because not only is it a great book, and I do think it could potentially be a comp for you. It's one of those really tricky comps because it has become such a book that is larger than itself. And one of those comps, when we talk about it, it is starting to become ubiquitous in that sense. And it's a memoir, and this is a literary fiction novel. So I don't know if we need it necessarily, but I can appreciate how it is a comp here. I don't know. It also, and I don't think this can necessarily be a comp because it's a bit old. It also reminded me a bit of History of Wolves. I don't know if you've read that book, and if you haven't, it's a really great book. One of my favorite literary novels. Yeah, I don't know. So I think everything you've written in that paragraph is super interesting and potentially on point, but Educated isn't one of those comps that I, as an agent, could then use and pitch this book to editors with because they can't use it as the comps when they run a P&L. So just flagging that. So one of the things I love about this query letter is this ticking timeline countdown. Love this, right? The world's going to end in 7 days. I love when we have this like ticking clock being like, okay, especially in a literary novel, because so often with literary novels, they can be quiet in a certain sense, right? So this is, you know, just doing so much for this query letter in a really, really good way. So I love that. I love that she seeks to find her mother. You know, we know that the mother always had the answers. That's great. We discover that the mother's left for a reason. Fantastic. We don't know necessarily if she finds the mother. It sounds like she potentially doesn't, but we do find out maybe she learns more about her mother, which is great. But overall, I think this is a really, really strong query letter. So I don't have a ton of notes, you know, in a structural sense. I think you're checking all the boxes. That first paragraph, you know, as I said, coming back to it, I have some questions potentially, but overall, this is a really interesting pitch.
Thank you, Carly. Okay, Cece, we're handing it across to you.
I feel like we need to count how many times we get Educated as a comp on the podcast. I am a huge Educated fan, so I'm not complaining, but it does happen quite a lot. My note is, as usual, about the plot paragraph. We have the sentence that sets the protagonist on their journey. Honey secretly searches for her mother. And then after that, we have a sentence which I believe is there to back up what that search looks like. And that sentence tells us that she is willing to steal a phone, trust a girl with a pretty smile, and wander the desert alone to bring her mother back. In my opinion, this type of framing is not serving your query letter because it's very loosey-goosey. I don't understand how these things are connected. Does she steal the phone? And based on what she sees on the phone, she then starts trusting this girl? And is the girl the reason she goes to wander in the desert? Where is the causality? I don't see the causality, and I need to. It's really important in a story to have that dominoes tipping over effect. We talk about it all the time on the podcast for a reason. You don't want highlights. You don't want orbiting satellite points that don't fit together in a way that tell me what thing caused the other thing. So that's really, really important. And I would revise that. I also want to say that the author paragraph, that line about her writing this as a way to process her own growing up, is great. Like, I love that because, you know, one thing I do with my clients whenever we're out on submission is I always ask them, do you want to write a letter to the editors who are going to get your story? And, you know, you might want to choose to highlight in this letter the personal connection that you have with the story, like where the inspiration came from, like where is essentially the truth within the lie? Like, yes, you wrote fiction, but what's the truth behind that story? And clearly you would write a fantastic letter. So excellent.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, Carly, will you give us a summary of what's in those opening pages?
All right. So we start with our protagonist. She is watching her father break horses. So in the process of kind of training them and everything that goes along with being on a ranch. She is also kind of the expectation that her father is going to choose who is going to take over the ranch. It is between her and her sister. She is almost 18. So she says, you know, I'm almost 18 and father must choose who inherits the ranch, the land, and everything that comes with it before my birthday. And then again, we're watching the father kind of break the horses. And then she kind of gets the sense that she's going to be called in, and she is. And then he hands over the rope, and then it's kind of her turn to break the horse. she is kind of, for the whole process, she's named the horse, you know, River, and has this kind of connection with them. So she has a lot of emotions that's going through her in this process. And then all of the kind of rage and jealousy and everything is kind of flowing through her body as she goes through the process of breaking the horse. And that is where it ends.
Wonderful. Okay, what was your take on that? Are the opening pages doing the heavy lifting? Are they getting us intrigued? Are they drawing us into the story? What do you think?
So my big question here is kind of around that line that I read to you guys. I'm almost 18 and father must choose who inherits the ranch, the land, and everything that comes with it before my birthday. I'm kind of thinking, who decided that, right? Is it like himself or the law or the, like there's a will or I don't know. I was just a bit confused about why now. I get the sense that this opening of the novel potentially isn't where we need to begin because it does feel like it's just in service of trying to tell the reader something as opposed to us choosing to enter the story at the exact right time. Another thing I'm a bit confused about is how much she knows about the world and the situation. So in the pitch, I got the sense that she is potentially not very worldly. And then in the opening paragraph, it says, behind him, there's two columns of black smoke building from the peaks of the San Bernardino Mountains, one wildfire burning somewhere near Malibu or the rich homes of Santa Monica, the other choking the tourist in the Hollywood Hills for the eighth time this year. That kind of stopped me a little bit because I got the sense from the pitch that maybe she's been told about these places but hasn't been to them. So then how does she know these things? Maybe she has been there and I'm the one that's going to be surprised when, you know, she's actually toured quite a bit of, you know, California for the ranch or something like that. I was a bit confused about that because also, again, you have educated as a comp. So my expectation is that at this stage in the book is uneducated and therefore there is an education to happen. So that actually really caught me off guard quite a bit. Her knowing about Malibu and Santa Monica and the Hollywood Hills and who might inhabit that. So that actually stopped me quite a bit from like getting into the scene here. And I know it was obviously just for the sense of contrast or potentially to educate me, the reader, about how much he actually does know about California. So again, there could be completely intentional reasons for all of this. I did not feel that the way that it was executed got across to me potentially the way that it was supposed to. Because then in the next page, she says, I want to see just once the redwoods, the great oak trees of the valley, the snow, and the Sierras. I want to drive a truck up the coast of California to San Francisco to Portland. So then I'm like, okay, then she hasn't seen a lot of the world. So what part has she seen? How is she learning about the world? Is it through books or is it through movies? How has she been taught about the world? So I actually didn't get a sense that I actually knew her very well or her process of being educated and growing up on the ranch and all of this. Yeah, so that was kind of my main thing about it there. And then the relationship between her and the dad is very interesting to me because we get the sense, again, the dad has to choose between the sisters in terms of who is going to inherit the ranch. And the point where the dad says, it's your turn, father says to me, his voice low and rough, a sound I could recognize anywhere, you're old enough now. In that moment, I think there's an opportunity, again, not to go into a whole backstory or, you know, diatribe here, but why would she recognize that voice anywhere? Or maybe it's that tone of voice she would recognize anywhere. Why does it make her feel a certain way? When was the last time he used that tone? Because obviously I know you'd recognize your dad's voice anywhere. And, you know, if you've grown up with him, of course you would, right? But what is it about that tone of voice? I actually felt like I didn't get to know anything really about their relationship. So I think there was just a huge opportunity there to really get into that moment. And then from a tech perspective, some parts of this weren't left aligned. So just check that to make sure your entire file is in left alignment. And I will stop there. Those are my notes.
Thank you, Carly. I know sometimes when I export from Scrivener into Word, it does this weird thing. So writers, just be aware of this. Scrivener can be a great tool, but sometimes it'll do these kinds of things. So just be aware of that. Okay, Cece, your take?
All right. So I'll share a micro note. The first line reads, father is gentle when breaking his horses. Is that a good first line? Yes, it's good. I think it could be even better. I don't know if this fits your story, but I would make it, father is only gentle when breaking horses. I would remove the his. I get that they're his horses, but we can learn about that detail later. It just makes for a tighter sentence. And I would add the only. If this is true, it makes me instantly curious about their relationship. I am watching a very young person observing how the one time her father is gentle is when breaking horses. And breaking horses is essentially taming horses, which is something that requires asserting dominance. So I think there's so many interesting layers that could be foreshadowed from that sentence. Again, maybe it doesn't fit your world, but if it doesn't, then what line could you include that would make me not just curious about what's happening in scene, the man breaking the horses, but the larger dynamic they share? Why is he not gentle with her or others unless he's breaking horses? So I think that that's something to think about. First lines are really important. First lines are essentially the opportunity any reader has of creating cerebral fusion. That's when the reader's brain and the storyteller's brain essentially become one, even though no one's in the same space together. It feels like magic. It's leveraging imagination. It's really, really important. And then the other thing I'd say as a big picture note is I know that we are being told that this is a very high stakes situation, like the whole two women, one spot, you know, but I didn't feel the emotions were landing. Like the premise is very juicy, very interesting, but the level of emotionality needed to back that up, in my opinion, wasn't there, nor was the interiority. And you really need emotionality and interiority to eventually lead us to psychological acuity. And the reason why Educated is such a fantastic book is the psychological acuity. So again, I think you have a really cool premise. I just think you need to dig deeper into this protagonist's psyche. And I think that actually connects with Carly's really great note about what does she know about the world beyond? She's giving all these sharp specifics of Hollywood and you know, specific areas, but like, how does she know that? And so I'm wondering, you might have to spend some more time with your protagonist before this is ready. Or maybe you already know and you just need to reflect that on the page.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, now we're going to move on to our second query letter. Will you please read that for us, Cece?
If you have a busy life like me, you're always thinking of ways to spend less time in the minutiae of a task and have more time to actually do the thing. And that's why I love Notion, and I've integrated the Notion desktop app into my family and home life. I'm obsessed with my kids' activity tracker. If you're like me, we're juggling hockey and gymnastics, swimming, music, skiing, and camps between two kids. That's a lot to schedule. I also really love our Notion travel planner. We've lined up a Disney trip for next year, and I know I have a lot to juggle with all the apps and to-dos just within that plan. Planning alone, and my family health binder. Having a single spot to access our family records and information is so useful. You never know when you're going to need it all and really fast. So you can customize these or grab templates that others have originated. I've chosen to use it as my home digital filing cabinet and planner. They have a new function to add to their already stellar project bases, AI integration. The new Notion AI is a single AI tool that does it all. Search across Notion and other apps, generate docs in your own style, analyze PDFs and images, and chat with you about anything. Notion AI is designed to protect your privacy. Notion AI's partners are contractually prohibited from using your data to train their AI models. And Notion respects the permissions of your content, so will only reference content that you have access to. You guys know I'm anti-AI for creative writing, but very pro-AI for life hacks, marketing, and life productivity. Notion is an incredible tool to track habits, manage expenses, and build your own databases for home or work. It has templates and planners that will help you aesthetically and practically design your life. Try Notion for free now when you go to notion.com/TSNOTYAW. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/TSNOTYAW to try the powerful, easy to use Notion AI today. And when you use our link, you're supporting our show. That's notion.com/TSNOTYAW. I know you've been following along with my vacation updates, so here's one. We've decided on our next summer's holiday, and we're going to, drumroll please, France. Between the French Riviera and Paris, I'm going to need some French language training so I do not embarrass myself abroad. So I'll be working on my French with Rosetta Stone all winter to get ready. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program available on desktop or as an app, and it truly immerses you in the language you want to learn. My husband and I are going to focus on Rosetta Stone together this winter, so we're ready for vacation and to set a good example for the kids culturally, because learning the language of where you're traveling to is a sign of respect, and we can't always assume that people speak English. Rosetta Stone is a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. We're talking Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and many more. There's fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you in so many ways. There's no English translations, so you can really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. It's an intuitive process to pick up a language naturally. They have their speech recognition. Their built-in true accent feature gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. There's flexible learning anytime, anywhere on the app or desktop. And really, truly amazing value. The lifetime membership has all 25 languages for any and all trips and languages needed in your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses that Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. It's a steal. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Rosetta Stone listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today for 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Dear Cece, based on your interest in stories about families both inherited and found, I hope you will enjoy my 95,000-word historical novel, Dust. Set in the years just before the Oregon Trail forever changed the face of the American West, Dust follows a young woman's perilous journey west as she struggles to survive not only the untamed wilderness, but her unyielding paw's tight grip on the family. A literary reimagining of westward expansion, it will appeal to readers of C. Pam Zhang's How Much of These Hills is Gold, Lauren Groff's The Vaster Wilds, and Olivia Hawker's One for the Blackbird, One for the Crow. 1843, Utah Country. Casey is no stranger to hard times. Raised on a desert ranch well beyond the current American frontier, she works tirelessly to earn her stoic pa's affection. But when a drought forces Casey and her family to leave the only home she has ever known, her life is turned upside down. She reluctantly adopts Pa's vision of starting anew in Oregon, but wildfire, illness, and rattlesnakes plague their journey, ultimately claiming Casey's beloved Ma. Bereft, Casey struggles to fill the hole Ma leaves and care for her younger brother Colt, while Pa spirals into his own grief. As they reach the mountains, Pa's erratic behavior becomes a bigger threat to Casey and Colt's survival than hunger or cold. Desperate, Casey leaves their alpine camp in an ill-fated attempt to seek help, only to find herself alone when she returns. Months later, Casey has almost given up on reuniting with her family when she meets a frightened girl who offers her a new sense of purpose and a clue as to Pa and Colt's whereabouts. But when she discovers why the girl is on the run, Casey must decide which offers a better chance of survival, seeking out her family no matter the cost to the girl or pursuing the fragile independence she is just beginning to build. I am a strategy executive by day, a mom to a bright and exhausting 3-year-old from dawn until dusk, and a writer during those oh-so-precious nap times. As an active member of Boston's Grub Street writing community, I benefit greatly from the wisdom of both the instructors and the other writers. The first 5 pages of the completed manuscript are attached. I would be thrilled to share Casey's whole story with you. Thank you for your consideration, Katie.
Thank you, Cece. Okay, before we go into the word count and your take on that, just a reminder to our listeners that the written critiques will be available in next Tuesday's Substack. So for those of you who are our Substack subscribers, you can look in Tuesday's newsletter and you will find the marked up critiques there. Okay, Cece, word count and your take on that.
So this one came in at 404 words. Instead of a critique, I am offering a cookie. I know you can't see me, but this is so good, you get a cookie. Now, because we are not in the same space, I will have to eat the cookie for you. I will be your proxy in enjoying the cookie, but you get a cookie. Seriously, this query letter is really great. I could see the plot as I was reading it. I could absolutely shoot the movie trailer for this if I had to. Like, I could picture her on her journey from the inciting incident all the way up until the climax. You've left a room for mystery. Like, is her family still alive? What did this girl do? While still giving us a whole bunch of really specific escalating plot points. I am just applauding you here. Like, really, congratulations. And yeah, enjoy a cookie.
You are so selfless, Cece, to have the cookie on Katie's behalf. Gosh, how you suffer for our listeners. I absolutely love it. Yeah, Cece's halo is about to strangle her. Okay, so now, excellent that you have written such an amazing query letter, Katie. But now the thing is, do the opening pages fulfill the promise of the query letter. And we will discuss that shortly. So we will see. Carly, what was your take on that?
All right. So my big note was, you did so good, exclamation, 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 A plus, exclamation, exclamation, exclamation. So, you know, I was very, very impressed with this. My only notes, and obviously this is our job if you're coming on our show, is let's talk about the comps. So how much of these hills is gold? I believe was Booker nominated. Lauren Groff, The Vaster Wilds. I mean, if Lauren Groff hasn't been nominated for Booker, she should. Like, we're talking about like capital L literary fiction greats of all time. Let's be serious here. So I'm expecting a lot from these pages. This query letter delivered on the quality of storytelling that I expect from those comps. The only other comp that you might want to think about is Four Winds. Kristen Hannah could be a comp here. You know, obviously I haven't read your whole book, but I've read Four Winds. So I don't know, could be potentially an opportunity there if you feel like those comps might be too capital L literary for your actual book. And I don't mean this in a way to be like, there's no way you can be as good as Lauren Groff. I would love it if you were as good as Lauren Groff. I would love to be like, we discovered the next Lauren Groff on the show. Amazing, amazing, amazing. That would be my favorite thing ever. But we always have to be a little bit careful when we're saying like our book is as great as the greats. So I hope that that is true. And let's get into it.
Awesome. Okay, Cece, what are in those opening pages?
So the protagonist discovers that a cow unfortunately died in the heat, and she worries that they won't make it without the cow. The cow is a source of sustenance and food for them. She tells her mom she knows they have to move really quickly or else the meat won't be good. The mom tells her to then tell the dad, and she goes off to do that, and we see the protagonist walking to find her father.
Okay. So do you feel like she started in the right place? Do these opening pages fulfill the promise of the query?
The opening pages need work. And this might be a situation where it's one of two things. Either it's not starting in the right place, and then I'd need to know more about your story to figure out where we could start. Or you are starting in the right place, but you need to dig deeper. What do I mean by that? You are doing an excellent job of describing setting and of ensuring clarity of scene. Like, I know exactly where the protagonist is, what she's doing. Like, it was very clear, very organized, very thoughtful and polished. But when it comes to her interiority and her emotionality, I feel like we are barely scratching the surface. And I'll give you an example. From the very first page, there's a line that reads, you know, she really wants Pa to recognize that she could contribute to the family. Like, this is a part of her emotional makeup. This is who she is. She wants to be someone who is seen as someone who can contribute, who can carry her own weight. And then she finds out that the cow died and she's desperate, right? The problem is that when you are someone who internalizes responsibility like this, when you are that kind of person and your job is to go feed the cow and you find out the cow died, most likely you will suffer tremendous guilt. That will be the irrational, illogical, but very human first emotion you will feel. Guilt over having let the cow die. Now, and then after feeling guilt, you might feel anger because you might go, I shouldn't have been the one, you know, left responsible for the cow, or I told them we should have fed the cow earlier, or, you know, I'm too young to be doing this. And then after feeling anger, you maybe feel resentment that your sibling who's younger doesn't have to shoulder the responsibilities that you need to shoulder, only then to feel guilt again because you are now angry and resentful towards your little brother. So, and these are just examples. I have no idea what your protagonist actually feels. You know your protagonist. I don't. But my point is all these messy, layered emotions need to be there. We need emotions that logically make no sense, but are human. We need emotions that feel contradictory, but again, very possible for humans to feel apparently contradictory emotions. We need that inner turmoil. Without the inner turmoil, when she goes talk to her mom, all she's doing is relaying information that the cow died. You know, her mom then says, go tell your father. I got no information on whether that was typical of her mom or not. Like, she did not think typical of mom to let me do the work of telling dad. Or maybe she was surprised. Oh my God, mom normally wouldn't do this. She must be really freaked out, you know, if she's making me go tell dad. Or something else. How does she interpret her mom's actions? seeing how she would interpret that is so essential to developing character and to really giving me access to her psyche. Or else I'm not going to be immersed in the story in the way that I need to be immersed to really, really imprint with the character. The second scene, which is when she's looking for her father, the pace is really dragging there. Like, I feel like you can cut that. You can cut 90% of it. We're getting a lot of like her, she's walking towards her father. I don't think we need to see that. I think you can cut to the scene where she's already there telling her father, because it's really, really important for us to keep the pace moving, because we already know what she's going to tell her father. So just to see her walking and thinking, it's just not enough to keep the curiosity flowing. I think you have a really interesting premise. I think you have a really good idea. And I think there's a lot of promise in the execution, but I don't think it's quite there yet. Our Substack subscribers will be able to see additional notes. I have notes on the writing on a line level, notes on how to frame the direct thoughts in italics, on the importance of doing that in the present tense, and other notes. So check those out if you are a subscriber.
Thank you, Cece. Something I just want to add there before we go to Carly is that when we talk about world building in this kind of fiction, you know, when we talk about world building, people tend to think we're talking about fantasy or sci-fi or something like that. But even in something like this, you need to be building your world. And that kind of interiority helps build the world. It establishes dynamics. It establishes a character's motivations. It establishes their biggest fears in the world. Without you saying her biggest fear is this, is letting so-and-so down. Her biggest fear is, you know, her father being disappointed in her. So make sure that you spend time on this kind of interiority, on this kind of emotionality as part of the world building, as opposed to feeling like world building is something that happens in its own paragraph underneath what's happening in the story. It really needs to be braided through everything so seamlessly that the reader doesn't even realize that you are doing world building. Okay, coming to you now, Carly, your thoughts on that?
I want to echo what Cece was saying about the quality of the scene on the first page, especially. You can tell this person went over this first page so many times, and I could absolutely visualize where we were in terms of the setting. I could smell it. I could see it. I could feel the heat, like I was there. So absolutely fantastic job in that regard. And then obviously when the animal dies, I was like, oh, I was so gutted. And obviously it's a very sad thing no matter what. But because we were so in scene with our five senses, I think this was just a tremendous job. So everybody definitely check that out on our Substack. Okay. So in terms of our notes, Cece was bringing up the interaction between our protagonist and her mother. And I want to come back to that as well. I felt like this was a huge missed opportunity because my notes here were just that I simply didn't understand it because, like, I'll run you through a little bit here. You better go on up and find your pa then. Ma's voice was uncharacteristically heavy. Colt and I will get a start on butchering. I could help you, Ma. Pa could hardly argue that the drought was her doing, but Casey could already picture the disappointment in his eyes when she told him about the cow. Colt's too small to be much use. Ma shook her head, retying her bandana to pull the wisps of hair, sweat plastered to her forehead. You know how he is. He'll dawdle up there and he's just as likely to get lost himself as find Pa. You'll be quicker. So all of this was kind of around this idea of like, who's going to be slower? And I felt like in this last line, the mother thinks that Colt will be slow, but also wants him to help. So then why is she choosing Colt to do that job? Like, why is he better at that job than going to get the dad if he's going to be slow at both? I don't know. To me, I didn't understand anything about the family dynamics from this interaction. And it was a huge opportunity for us to learn a lot more in terms of the specifics of what would any given person in the family do in that scenario. And again, that's just a great opportunity there to really double down and express to us how well you know your characters. I think that was really important. My last thing I'm going to say is that I personally find it's too coincidental that we have two animal issues here. And I understand that their relationship to the land and the animals, and obviously that's just huge in terms of their life, but to lose the cow and then for the horse to kind of get loose, I don't know, to me, it just felt like if this is a metaphor for something, you kind of did it twice in the sense of like, okay, obviously the one animal dies, the other one is lost. What are you trying to say about our relationship to the land and the animals? And again, how this all connects in terms of this ecosystem. I kind of feel like we have to choose one. I don't quite understand why we need two animal issues here. All of it is beautifully written and I can visualize it, and it is really stunning in terms of the quality. But from a pace point of view, which Cece was mentioning, like we got to get to the adventure, and where we are in some ways, you know, stalling, even though it is 5 pages. So I leave all of that with you. I do think this is a super interesting premise, and I do think there is really quality writing here. I think there's just potentially a bit more exploring to do about what these 5 pages need to do.
Wonderful. Thank you, Carly and Cece, as always, for your incredible insights. You can go to our Substack and you can see them written up there. That's it for today's episode. Next week, we have our author interview, and we'll be back in 2 weeks' time with another Books with Hugs.
A reminder that this is an unscripted program and our conversations have been edited and condensed and is not a full picture of our feedback or conversation directly with each author. As always, refer back to our written notes for the fulsome picture. Carly Waters and Cece Lira are agents at PS Litera Agency, but their work on this podcast is not affiliated with the agency, and the views expressed by Carly and Cece on this podcast are solely that of them as podcast co-hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views, opinions, policies, or position of PS Litera Agency. A reminder about all the ways that you can support us as a show: rate us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, tell your writing friends about us. We'd love to help as many writers as possible. And follow us on our Substack newsletter. Get our stacked newsletter on a weekly basis, bonus videos, articles, essays, advice, and more. You can find it at theshitaboutwriting.substack.com. That's theshitaboutwriting.substack.com.
And that's it for today's episode. I hope you'll join us for next week's show. In the meantime, keep at it. Remember, it just takes one yes. Are you tired of hearing that publishing is filled with gatekeepers who are impossible to gain access to? So are we. That's why we're arranging for you to meet them at our 2025 Deep Dive Virtual Retreat, which is happening on the 1st and 2nd of February. We've reverted back to a weekend format so that we can accommodate as many of our listeners from across the world as possible. But if you loved the breakout room sessions and workshops from the 10-week deep dive, don't worry. We'll still be including sessions like those before and after the 2-day intensive. Plus, this year we're focusing on giving you access to way more gatekeepers, so expect to hear from agents and editors who've worked on some of the last decade's best-selling books. Subscribe to our Substack or follow us on Instagram so that you can be the first to be in the know as we begin to reveal our incredible lineup each week. Mark the dates in your calendars, especially the 29th of November, which is the early bird pricing registration day, which you definitely don't want to miss. Are you looking for the perfect gift for the writer in your life? Are you the favorite writer in your life and you want to gift yourself something awesome? Then come take a look at the Ultimate Planner for Writers for 2025. It not only allows you to plan for your regular day-to-day with hourly time slots, it also allows you to brainstorm, research, plot, outline, do scene planning, and vision boarding all in one. And it's available as a physical planner or as an e-planner. Check out Bianca Murray and find the Planner for Writers tab for more information. Remember to order early to avoid the end of year rush.